Welcome to Highly Sensitive Money, where we dive into the intersection of self-care and social justice. I'm your host, Diana Yanez, and today we're embarking on a journey to explore how we can balance our commitment to making a difference with the necessity of nurturing ourselves along the way. Today we'll be talking about self-care and social justice. Well, when I think about social justice, I think a lot of us will sometimes cut ourselves out of the equation, right? We'll think, how much can I do? Like, there's so much pain in the world. What can I do to really make a difference, to really make an impact? And it can become one of those things where you're just living for others. I think of a couple of different examples. Like, one of them is there's a book by Elizabeth Gilbert called The Signature of All Things. And there's an example there of a woman who's Quaker, and I am Quaker, and she's one of the sisters. And she decides that because it's during the time of slavery and that they're really like into abolitionism, because Quakers were a huge part of the Underground Railroad and they were really about making sure that enslaved people could be freed. Well, this woman just like, she cuts off anything that might have a harmful effect on others, but you see her like not really live her own life. She spends all of her time making her own clothes because she's not using slavery cotton, many different examples. And that's an extreme that you just think like, is that even possible, right? I have a cell phone. My cell phone probably is linked to an area in China that's going through genocide. So what do? Do we not use those things? That's like the extreme of social justice, right? And there are some people who are able to do that. There are some people who decide that that's the way that they want to go. Like a lot of us that are mostly, I'm like 80% vegetarian. And a lot of it is because of animals' well-being. My health has something to do with it. Cost has something to do with it. But it's a lot about like, how can we really hurt animals? How can I love animals and eat them? Right? That's the social justice portion of it. We can go to the other extreme where it's all about self-care, and that can be pretty selfish, right? It can be pretty hedonistic and be pretty much like living in the moment, Epicurean. Like it's not, other people's well-being is not connected at all. If you're listening to this episode, you're probably not in that section of like only about self-care. But how do we keep both entwined? And I'm going to talk more about my personal experience has been more on being on the martyrdom side of social justice, where I don't include myself as part of creation as someone that's entitled to well-being. Yeah, when it comes to like extreme self-care, where you only care about self-care, like I see the appeal. I see the appeal of just like living for myself. Like, I don't know why I was born into this world and I just want to feel good as good as I can while I'm doing it. But then when you look past it, right, when you start to inquire into like what actually is good, what actually is your dharma, you may realize that just looking for pleasure is not the way to freedom. When it comes to giving and receiving, because self-care and social justice, it's like we have to include ourselves within the whole of creation. And giving and receiving is usually best when it's beneficial to both. Right? When both parties, when everyone involved can walk away saying, that was a good exchange. That was an exchange that I feel happy with. Like, I know what happened and I feel whole. I feel respected in it. One of my favorite examples of giving and receiving that really brought in, and this was more of a family example, because social justice can also be like your community's well-being. It depends on what lens you're looking through it. But I had a client who, for her, family was a really, really important value. And she is the child of immigrants. She'd gone to school. She worked in finance. So she had a high paying job. Finance tends to be well paid. And she wanted to be there for her family. It was important that she'd be able to support them. And at the same time, she had her own goals that she was working towards. She was working towards like a down payment on a home. She was working towards her retirement. There were, and just balancing both things, right? Because her mom would call her and say, hey, so-and-so had a car accident and needs help. So-and-so is having a medical emergency. There were just different things that the family needed. And her mom was kind of a conduit to her. And my client would feel like, I want to be able to help, but I don't know how much to help. And there was kind of resentment that was starting to create itself. And she wasn't completely aware of it, but she could also tell that she was like, when her mom would call, there was like a sense of dread. Like, what is she going to call me about? And at the same time, then she would lash out at herself because she wanted to be able to help. What my client decided to do, this was completely on her own, and it was a beautiful idea, but just like people will create travel budgets, she created a family budget. And every month she was said, this is how much I'm going to put into the family budget. Not that her family called every month, but they would call and she wasn't sure how much to give. And now here was an amount that she was putting aside every month that she knew she could do and that would also allow her to like save for her own goals, right? For the down payment, for the retirement. And she talked about it with her mom. Her mom was like totally on her side about it. She said, Mom, these are the goals that I have and I want to be there for family. When I tell you that this is how much is in the family account, can you back me up? Right? And that's beautiful. That was beautiful. That was definitely a way that my client could live into her value of family being important while also providing for her other needs. Right? She was giving from a sense of love rather than only duty. Like duty was a part of it, but it was more of like sharing from it. Because when we give out of guilt, we create a weird debt for the recipient, right? I don't know if anyone's experienced that, where someone gives you something that they really don't want to give you. And then afterwards, you're like, huh, I feel kind of dirty in this exchange. Like, I don't think this was the way that it was supposed to go down. And I can think of in my family, one of my family has this thing of like, whenever we like something that the other one is wearing, especially amongst us women, we'll give it to each other. And I remember one time I told my aunt, I really loved her bracelets. I think it was like her bracelets or her earrings, some kind of jewelry that was like, it wasn't like pricey jewelry or anything, but I was like, oh, that's really cute. I love it. Where'd you buy it? And she's like, oh, here you go. And she gave it to me, but she didn't want to give it to me. And I was like, don't give it to me. Just tell me where you bought it. I'll go buy my own. It was so funny of this like unconscious thing that we had, my family had, of sharing, especially like clothing and jewelry amongst women. And I think it's because my mom is the oldest of three. Like there were six children. Three of them were women, were girls, and they all kind of have similar bodies. So like their clothing was always like who owns what. But I remember my aunt, she didn't want to give it to me. She didn't want to give me those bracelets. And that's like a very small example of where giving can feel icky or receiving can feel icky. There are other ways to give outside of money, right? Like if you want to live into your value of social justice, of community well-being, of building the future that you want to see, then it isn't always about money. Because sometimes we don't have extra money, but we do have time, right? We can volunteer, we can gift of our time and our treasure, we can volunteer, we can educate others, we can educate ourselves, we can advocate, and we can create solutions, right? You can support people who are working towards those ideals. I love reminding people that individuals can't solve collective problems. And this is a quote from Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams, who is a Zen monk. And she says that, and she just, it's such a beautiful reminder that we can do many things and yet we can't do everything. So how do we stay in the work? I was going to say, how do we stay in the struggle? But it's really like, how do we stay in the work? We have to be nourished ourselves in order to really be able to continue doing this work. There's a quote, another quote by Lila Watson that really motivates me in all of this work. And it's, if you have come here to help me, then you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your well-being is bound up with mine, then let us work together, right? Lila Watson is an Aboriginal artist. She's a professor in Australia. And this quote just reminds me of our interconnectedness. And that really is, for me, one of the biggest gifts of being highly sensitive. It's been very difficult sometimes to see other people's pain and really experience it as my own. And at other points, I just see that I'm not alone in it. Right? That we are all randomly dropped off on this earth and then get to add meaning to our life. Viktor Frankl says that it is not for life to give us purpose, but for us to decide purpose for our life. And I'm paraphrasing all these quotes. I'm just like saying them off the top of my head. And they're quotes that remind me to stay on the path that feels right for me today. Because at the end of the day, we never know if we're on the right path. It's just like looking backwards that you're like, I think that was the right decision. And when people come to me asking for guidance on money, I get to remind them of that. Money looks like a math problem because it has numbers, but it's really a psychology problem. There really aren't right answers to psychology questions. It's just more about, where are you today? Who do you want to be? What's important to you? What do you value? Which is why in the first times that I work with people, it's just like, let's identify your values. Let's make sure that your cash, that your income, that your outcome, that your outflows reflect your values. That quote by Lila Watson that reminds us, she says, if you have come here to help me, then you're wasting your time. What she's calling out there is savior mentality. If you have come here with the answer, then you're not going to listen to me. If you have come here with preconceived ideas of what should happen, then you're not going to be in relationship with me. You are wasting your time and you're wasting my time. But if you have come so that we can actually work together, so that we can actually create a different vision together, then let's hold hands and move forward. If we're not including ourselves in the community that's going to benefit from social justice, then we become distant. We can become a bit of a martyr of like, look at all I'm doing to help others. And again, that can lead us into savior mentality of like, I've got the answer. Just like my client who decided that value, that family was an important value to her and that she wanted to give to them. She wasn't doing it out of a desire to feel better than them or have them thank her, which is nice to get thanks. It was more of a desire of like seeing how they're interconnected and she didn't want them to suffer. And also, how do you make it so that you're not making the recipient entitled? How do you give in a way where the other person still takes hold of their vigor? In Seven Stages of Money Maturity, George Kinder, he wrote this book and he talks about, there's this chapter on vigor, on like being able to move forward. And he says how sometimes people of wealth, people who have a lot of access to money, because they don't have to make ends meet, they don't have to figure out the puzzle that is money, it can cut their vigor. It can cut their willingness to go out and explore, right? So it's always a gentle tug and pull of like, how do we keep ourselves empowered enough and also receive help? So we started off with the question of how do you balance self-care and social justice? And honestly, it's a moving target. It is such a moving target and it's day by day. What do you have the capacity to give? What do you need? Do you know how to receive? If you know how to receive, then you know that in the giving, there's actually no hierarchy. Sometimes we give, sometimes we receive. We're just interconnected. Like that. The question that I want to leave people with is, what is the most life-giving way for you to work towards social justice and community well-being? If social justice, if your community, if the people around you, if it is a goal of yours to have them do well and thrive, if you see how their thriving is connected to yours, then what is the most life-giving way for you to support that? And we all have different skills. As a highly sensitive person, I really limit my exposure to the news. And I've carried a lot of shame around that because I'm not as well informed on day-to-day politics. And at the end of the day, I also know that it wipes me out. Like, I can read the news and spend hours crying. And I mean, it's not a great skill. It's not a great skill of just like, it's not the place where my gifts are best used. And I've learned to forgive myself around the fact that I'm pretty uninformed on current events. And yet I know enough. And yet when there is a topic that I'm very curious about, I will like set time aside to go and inform myself. There are people in my life who I know are very in touch with day-to-day events, with current events, politics, world news, and I'll go and I'll talk with them about it. And I self-soothe through it, right? Because me being well-informed is important. And at the same time, I don't want it to take me out. I don't want to show up despondent or lose hope in the world that's possible. So instead, what I've learned to do is to bring it into my work, right? I'm super proud and grateful that all of the ways that I earn income today are aligned with my values. And that hasn't always been the case, because sometimes you just need to make ends meet. You just need to have a job. And that's fine. It's totally like, not all of us have a calling, and that's fine. Like, sometimes I think that our workaholism culture, like the way that we put work on a pedestal in the United States, in Western culture, can be really detrimental, right? Because our sense of worth is so tied up to our work. And yet I'm happy to be able to enjoy it today. It does feel good. It does feel good to know that the way that I earn income is actually building the world that I want to see. And then the way that I spend, I try to make sure that I support like local artisans, and I don't haggle. I live in Mexico City, so I don't haggle, even though like haggling is part of my culture and part of the way that I grew up. I grew up in a swap meet where we haggled all of the time. But now I know that I don't, right? Because of my privilege of earning dollars and living in a third world country. So what are the ways that I bring social justice and community well-being and self-care into my life? Like, how I can share personally how I balance those things. I do accessibility pricing for my coaching. I want to be able to work with a wide range of people. And then in my investment advising work, that's for ultra high net worth individuals. That's for the higher end. But for coaching, it's accessible. And I do that by making it be a percentage of people's income. I provide a lot of free resources for how to do money in a way that's supportive to yourself and to your community. I volunteer with organizations that create change. That's really important. And you'll hear from those organizations in this first season of Highly Sensitive Money. We have Rose Fierick, who is the co-director of Wisdom and Money, which provides people of wealth an avenue for them to bring their mystical Christian practices into their money conversations. We'll also talk with Leo Freeman, who is a founding member of Radical Planners, which helps financial advisors become activists and activists become financial advisors. And I practice self-care through being in community with my Quakers. I'm looking for a local spiritual community here in Mexico City. I've been going to the Buddhist Center because that's felt really good. I've been centering like mutual pleasure, right? Like, what are things that feel good to me and feel good to people around me, like hiking and dancing and creating community? Because there's so much pain in the world. And Adrienne Marie Brown, who's just like a, in my eyes, she's such a bodhisattva. She talks about centering Black pleasure, like not only showing instances of people in pain, but also showing instances of what does it look like to enjoy yourself? Because the work of social justice needs to be pleasurable for us to stay engaged with it. Again, being a martyr doesn't help the one being a martyr and the one being martyred for, right? There's this quote from C.S. Lewis, the author of Narnia. He wrote a book called The Screwtape Letters. And there's a portion in it, I'm completely paraphrasing this, but he says that you can always tell who has someone that lives for them, right? And you can tell by like their haggard faces. Because if I live for my son or my daughter or my husband or my wife, then they're going to be oppressed by how much I want out of them, right? And most human relations are like that, that we're like asking something from someone else and it's not very clear. And you can kind of see that like that just the relationship feels icky and it just feels like confusing. Going back to the quote by Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams, where individuals can't solve collective issues, then the call is that we must become collectives capable of creating and demanding change, right? And that's again like Lila Watson's quote about if you have come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your well-being is bound up with mine, if you have come because you are willing to be in community with me, you are willing to be in relationship with me for us to work towards something new, then let us work together. That is such a beautiful call. And it moves us away from the sense of doom that can happen when we think it's all on our shoulders. I want to end with a quote by another one of my favorite people, Virginia Woolf. I've got a little candle of hers. And this is from A Room of One's Own. And Virginia Woolf says, "No force in the world can take from me my 500 pounds." Right? And this was, I believe, in the early 1900s. And whether this is real or not, I don't remember. But she had the person in this book had said that she had received 500 pounds a year from her aunt, which is a living income. I think it would be like the equivalent of about 75,000 a year in the US today. And she says, "Food, house, and clothing are mine forever. Therefore, not merely do effort and labor cease, but also hatred and bitterness. I need not hate any man. He cannot hurt me. I need not flatter any man. He has nothing to give me." So imperceptibly, I found myself adopting a new attitude towards the other half of the human race. So here she's talking about gender relations as a woman, as someone who back then was considered property. And I mean, in some ways, we still are. But now that she had this economic freedom, which we can say she had this access to self-care, food, shelter, rest, then she didn't have to resent others. That's why it's so important for all of us to have access to a living wage, for all of us to know how to manage our money in a way that provides for ourselves so that we have the capacity to give to others. And also just because we deserve to be able to eat, right? And here's another thing that I want to share. This is from a friend of mine, Kella Millen. She is a trauma recovery therapist and a beautiful, beautiful writer. And she writes a lot on rest. She writes on rest and she writes on social justice. And I want to share one of her writings. Rest is such a crucial, crucial part of self-care, especially if you are involved in any social justice work. Like, you need to be rested. Otherwise, we end up recreating systems of harm, right? You need to know what does it feel like in your body to be regulated so that you make decisions that work towards regulation, that continue to have that regulation in your body, that sense of well-being. And Michaela says, "With so much pain, violence, fear, and injustice around us, it is easy to believe that relentless action is the only right path forward. It's easy to minimize the value of rest, even though this quality nourishes our ability to show up for the relationships and causes that matter to us. Let's be nuanced about how we understand our need for rest, because rest as a practice is not in opposition to being active and engaged in things that matter. Our actions plant seeds, some of which we will not fully understand until later. Our frame of mind in the present shapes those actions, which shapes our futures. In my view, rest is different from detaching, escaping, or taking a vacation. While we may be letting go of thought, letting go of aspects of our identity, and letting go of shaping, when we rest, we are deeply present with ourselves and every other being. We are watching our experience. We are becoming quiet enough to perceive from the deepest wells within us." How can we create a new vision of the world? How can we create social justice, what Adrienne Marie Brown calls science fiction, given that we've never lived in a place that really gives social justice, when we're exhausted? And self-care, rest, completely free. You can simply lay down, listen to a yoga nidra on YouTube, and rest. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today to talk about self-care and social justice. And please let me know what you thought. Take care. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Diana Giselle Yáñez. Did you enjoy this episode? Please share this first season of Highly Sensitive Money with others. To learn how you can upskill your money relationship, join the newsletter over at allthecolors.net. That's allthecolors.net for network. Take care, and remember, you've got what it takes to feel good about your money.